part of it. We have some states that are really into it, and we have some states, that refuse to play ball, so to speak. And but we've had presentations from blind vendors from around the country who tell their stories of how they replaced their vending machines, and their sales went up 50%, 100%, 200%. In some cases, they closed their cafe and converted it to a micro market, and sales, have gone up 300%, and or at least profits have gone up because you've eliminated, all of the need for employees and things like that. The other part of being current is that you're in tune with your customers who want healthy options. It wasn't but a few years ago that blind vendors, when the whole idea of offering healthy options came up, but the answer, the response was hell no. We're not doing it. We have to throw away stuff. My customers don't want healthy options. In Tennessee, we had a governor issue an executive order that we had to provide a certain percentage of products that were healthy in the vending machines. As part of that executive order, we had to do a survey of the state employees and state buildings to see what they wanted. And we asked the question how often they use their vending machines. Only 5% said they use the vending machines at least once a week. Can get that now, 5%, which tells you one of two things. You can either say, we're wasting a lot of our time trying to please 5% of the people, or you can flip it around and say, we're missing out on 95% of our potential customers. And if by providing healthier options, we can reach those folks, then we need to be doing it. NAMA has created a new healthy vending initiative. NABM, we pushed and supported FitPick for years for blind vendors, but we believe that blind vendors ought to focus on making sure that those customers who want healthy options can get them from your machine. The seventh characteristic is that there's a focus on the future. We're not, and that you plan strategically. And I know this is a frustration for Nikki as well as me, but when we talk to vendors in the state, and they've got complaints about the agency, they have to go back and tell us about what happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and that's just not productive. When you're living in the past and you can't get over something that somebody did 5-10 years ago, then you're going to drive yourself crazy. You really are. It's not healthy from a mental standpoint. You need to be looking forward. We all need something to look forward to, and that's where your focus needs to be. We can look back on this pandemic, and we will learn a lot from this pandemic, but today we need to be looking to the future. How are we going to reinvent Randolph Shepherd? What are we going to do to change it? We started the year with 1,850 blind vendors. People think we're crazy, think Nikki and I are crazy, but we have looking at the numbers, we have projected that within the next 2 years we will be down to 1,300 or fewer blind vendors. What are we going to do to stop that decline? We have small victories here and there, but we have to think big picture, and we have to be thinking about the future as a program nationally. You need to be thinking about the future as a program in Connecticut, and each individual blind vendor needs to be thinking about the future and what they're going to do in their individual business. Part of that is to plan strategically. I'm a big advocate of having strategic plans. I've gone in and actually helped 7 or 8 states do a strategic plan. I think it's great because it does a lot of things. Number one, it helps facilitate that team approach I talked about. It also holds people accountable. You have something on paper. This is what we're going to do. And then when it doesn't get done, then you hold people accountable. But you've got to plan where you're going. If you don't plan, you'll, you'll never get to your destination. So focus on the future and plan strategically. Number eight is willingness to change. You have to be willing to do things differently. You know, many of us get stuck in our old ways. We want it done this way. We want it done our way. And, you know, we're not willing to change. We're not willing to take credit cards. We're not willing to use cash registers. We just want to open a cash drawer. And, you know, we're not willing to go from our old vending machine to a micro market. We're just stuck in our old ways. And, you know, there has to be a willingness to change and do things differently. I'm rushing through these as quickly as I can. Number nine, vendors must be politically engaged. Now, this is sort of an outlier in terms of the most, you know, as far as the BEP itself, but it's absolutely critical that blind vendors are engaged in the political process. That's nationally and on the state level. It's important that we have blind vendors that are who know their legislators, both their members of Congress and their local state legislators. It's important because they control your future. Your state legislature tomorrow could come in and say, we're going to vote to abolish the program, or we're going to vote to take away the priority and make them compete. We're going to vote to exempt this agency or that agency. They control your future. And it's important that you have that relationship, because it's a lot harder for them to vote on a bill that's going to hurt you if they know you by name. I'll tell you a quick story of Scott Young, who passed away, but he was a vendor in Tennessee. The Board of Regents wanted to exempt. They wanted the colleges exempt from our little mini Randolph-Shepard Act. And they went to a legislator and said, would you introduce this bill for us? He said, sure, I'll introduce the bill. He said, but before I do, I'm going to talk to Scott. He knew Scott. He knew Scott was on a college campus. And he took the bill to Scott. And, you know, Scott explained what that bill would mean to blind vendors. And so, you know, it got quite contentious at times during that session. But at the end, we were able to protect the livelihoods of all of 30-something blind vendors on college campuses because of Scott Young's relationship with that one member of the legislature. When we're going all over the country, we're talking to all these members of Congress, Nikki and I are, we're talking to staff, we're using all the resources we have, and then David Pelagi has a relationship with Congresswoman DeLauro, which gets us in the door and lets us tell our story, and, you know, bingo. Because of that relationship, you know, we're going to be able to, you know, hopefully have an appropriation. So being engaged is important. And I'll take that one step further. You know, it's important that you're engaged politically and with the consumer groups. Obviously, Nikki and I are members of NABN and the NSB, but, you know, consumer groups, the National Federation of Blind, do a lot for blind people and for Randolph Shepard, and so it's important to, you know, that you're part of that. And last but not least is effective training. You have to have quality training. When I'm talking about quality training, I'm talking about entry-level training, I'm talking about continued education training, and I'm talking about upper mobility training. The Committee of Blind Vendors needs to be involved in all three of those, and I want to make sure, you know, upper mobility training is, you know, that is training that's going to allow you to improve your skills so that you can move up in the organization. And so, you know, we need states that are, you know, helping to provide that training. Nikki and I always advocate for when we help states do new rules, that you put something in your new rules that require the blind vendors to get continuing education credit. So you have a license, and you need to be able to get so many points per year you know, or every 2 years, however you set it up, to be able to get to keep your license. Attending conferences like this, you could get points for. Attending BLAST, you would get points for. Doing online training, you'd get points for. There's all kinds of ways to get the points, but it's important that the vendors take it upon themselves to get the training that they need, and that the agency support that effort. So those are quickly the, you know, the abbreviated version. I'm probably run over a little bit, but the 10 characteristics of a highly effective BDP. Want to run them real fast. Business focus rather than on blindness. Number two is commitment to excellence. Number three is strong leadership. Number four is a team approach and plan strategically. Number five is current with the times. Number six, which I left out. I left out number six. Somehow I skipped it. But it was effective communication and transparency. Sorry, I left that one out. I don't know how I did that. My card stuck together. But anyway, that was number six. For those of you who were counting, you were going to call me on that. Number seven is focus on the future. Number eight is willingness to change. Number nine is vendors are politically engaged. And number 10 is effective training. If you are doing those 10 things well, then chances are you are building a very, very strong program in your state. And you know, helping move things forward. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will again thank you for allowing me to participate. I will hang around for a while on the call. If you make any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But I know we're short on time, so I will defer to you on that.
Yeah, I'm going to try and move on to our next caller. And if you're still around, by the time the next speaker is done and people have questions, I'd like to have you answer them if you're still here.
Okay.
All right. So with that said, our next speaker, obviously, you haven't heard that Pepsi has won the statewide vending contract. You might be living under a rock if you haven't heard that, but I just want to introduce Nicole Mayer and her team.
Nicole, hey, good morning. This is Colin Daly. I'm actually taking over Nicole Mayer. Nicole Mayer was the brains behind this, but she has she's still with Pepsi. She's moved on to she got a promotion, moved on to a different role. So I've been working closely with Tracy and Tyrell the last month. But again, I will be your main point of contact. So I just want to thank you for having me on the call. I know that we don't have a lot of time, but I will leave some time at the end for some questions that you may have. So, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Morning.
So I just wanted to touch base. Good morning. I wanted to just touch base, give you a little bit of information about myself, a little bit of information about Pepsi in general.
Good morning.
And good morning. And I'll just run through some bullet points, and again, I'll leave some time for some questions because I'm sure you will have some questions for me at the end. So as was mentioned, most of you must be aware that PepsiCo has won, you know, the next 5 years of vending and third-party operations for the state of Connecticut. So within the last month, we are starting to work on placing over 1,300 assets in terms of vending machines statewide. Thankfully, we have someone as organized as Tracy and Tyrell to work with, so we're very excited about the partnership moving forward, and it's only going to get better from here. So a little bit about Pepsi. So the great thing about Pepsi, number one, is based on our competition, the product portfolio that you're going to have access to is extremely strong and a lot more expansive, than what you're used to. So everything from beverages to nutrition, every year we top $70 billion in net revenue. We have $22 billion brands that we do sell, and we're in more than 200 countries and territories. Pepsi also employs more than 263,000 employees. So the scope and the product portfolio of what you're going to be able to access is going to be extremely strong. So from Gatorade to Starbucks to newly introduced Bang, Lipton Pure Leaf, Tropicana Juice, Naked, the portfolio is extremely strong, and that's why a lot of businesses want to partner with us. But I just wanted to run down a little bit of information for you. If you are listening via phone and you have a pen handy, I would like to give each of you my cell phone number, as I will be your main point of contact moving forward. Feel free to reach out with me with any questions, any concerns. If there's a equipment concern, if you have a question about your ordering, I will be your point of contact. I'm up early and I work late, so you're not going to be bothering me at any time of day that you're calling me. If I can't get to a phone call or an email, I will definitely get back to you in a timely manner. So I will give you my cell phone number. I did send it, and Tracy has it on hand. We talk a lot, so if you ever get stuck and you don't have it, she will definitely have my cell phone number and email. So again, my name is Colin Daly. That's C-O-L-I-N. Last name's D as in dog, A-L-Y. My cell phone number is 203-224-9876. And my email is Colin, C-O-L-I-N, dot Daly, D-A-L-Y, at PepsiCo.com. If I need to repeat that, please let me know, and I'll give you that information again. All right, seems like we're good. So I just want to touch on a few things here, bullet pointed. In terms of ordering, what we are planning on doing with each of your locations is giving you a dedicated sales rep. Each representative in the beginning will have them visit your location on a weekly basis to place an order. So what we plan on doing is we want to make sure they're coming in weekly. Not all of your locations will you be placing an order weekly, but for the sake of making sure that you're comfortable with the ordering, you're comfortable with the sales rep, we want them coming in weekly for you. When a month goes by and when we see that, hey, maybe this account only needs to order bi-weekly or monthly, or they do need to order weekly, we'll adjust from there. But in the beginning, we want to make sure that you're comfortable with Pepsi moving forward. The good thing about that, having a sales representative visit you, is that they're going to be able to let you know if there's any product innovation. If you get a cooler from us, this is how the cooler should be set up. They can assist you with that. And they'll also be a point of contact too for you as well. So what I will do is at the end of this, I will follow up. If you want to call me, I'm in the process of setting all these accounts up now. But any questions, definitely reach out to me. You're never going to bother me. Delivery days. So delivery days, this will be dependent on your location. Your sales representative will place your order 2 days prior to delivery. So, for example, if it visits you on a Tuesday, it'll be for a Thursday delivery, you know, Wednesday through Friday, so on and so forth. The one thing that we cannot get in the habit of doing is receiving an off-schedule delivery, because what that does, it ties up the trucks, and, you know, based on your location, that's where our trucks are that day. There could be extenuating circumstances, and we can talk that out. But we really want to try to avoid off-schedule deliveries. You probably have some questions about returns and out-of-dates. Because you will be on what we call pre-sale, meaning a sales representative will be visiting your location, all out-of-dates will be handled by your dedicated sales representative, and credits will be applied to your account. There are some exceptions to this, just because of the recent events of COVID. If something happens and where we do go in a state of being shut down again, which hopefully will not happen, we will accept full package cases with a 2 month date. So you will be able to get credit for those. It's just that if something is out of date, and let's just hope this scenario doesn't happen, but we will work on a case by case basis with you. In terms of product selection, so I can email, or if you want to call me, we can talk it through. I do have a product portfolio I can send to each and every one of you if that is helpful, because we do have a lot of, as I mentioned before, there is a vast array of products you can choose from. So it'd be helpful to send that to you, but I do have that readily available anytime that you might want it. In terms of equipment, so if any of your locations require any coolers, that is a free charge from Pepsi. So you'll never be charged for getting a cooler in your location. All service, if there's any service issues with it, there's never a charge for that. We actually operate with our own service technicians that literally drive the tech trucks home every night. So like the previous vendor, they farmed that out to a lot of third parties. And sometimes with other accounts that I've experienced, there was charges to any type of service they've done. So I'm not familiar with how it was in the past, but please know that there'll never be a charge for a cooler. There'll never be a charge for a service call. So we will provide the coolers for Pepsi, which is beverage only. We ask that if foreign product is placed in a Pepsi cooler, there will be contractual repercussions just because it's an exclusive Pepsi account. We also ask that the coolers are not, there's no food in our coolers. They're just not rated for food, and the health departments are aware of this. So I've run into this with other accounts that get a Pepsi cooler, and they're putting their pizza dough or salad dressings within the cooler. The health department doesn't like that just based on how the cooler's rated. So if you do need a cooler, I would say the typical turnaround time is 3 to 4 weeks. So if you're thinking, hey, I'm going to be up and running in a month and 2 weeks, we have to get those coolers ordered as soon as possible. So I do have cooler specs that I can send you. I did send it to Tracy and Tyrell. If you want to call me because email is just not accessible to you, I can go through that. So we have single door coolers, which are 10 cubic feet, that will hold 168 20 ounce bottles. We do have a Pepsi single door cooler, which is 26 cubic feet. That'll hold 360 20 ounce bottles. And depending on space, we do have a two door slide, and that'll hold 560 20 ounce bottles. So I do have the specs on those. If you do need the specs and you're worried about space, just give me a call, or you know, if you want to, you can shoot me an email. In terms of our coolers and equipment repair, we pride ourselves on our turnaround time with our repair services. So if it comes to a Pepsi cooler that you do not have functioning or it's not cooling, I do have an 800 number for you to call. You can certainly reach out to me, but I can tell you from experience that if the customer is calling in the repair, it's going to get done a lot quicker and turned around a lot quicker. Because what might happen is I might be in a meeting with another customer. You leave me a voicemail at 9 in the morning, I can't get to it till noon, and we've already passed 3 hours. Typically, what I've seen, if it's a cooler that is down, they tend to get there the very same day. Worst case scenario, it's a 24-hour turnaround. What will happen if you do get a cooler from us? We will place the cooler there, and what will happen is you'll get a sticker on Gene that has an asset number. So when you do call the 800 number for a repair, what you will need is that asset number, which is on the cooler, and that will directly let that technician that you're talking to know where you're located. Each account, you also get a 7-digit customer number. You can use that as well, and that will be provided to you upon setting up the account. So it's a quick turnaround time. We don't see a lot of issues with our coolers being placed. It's just a matter of knowing, you know, the specs of what you need and knowing the space that you have. So with that, I'm sure there's some questions for you. I know that was pretty quick, but I know that there's not a ton of time here as well. So I just want to open it up for any questions that you might have.
This is Frank. I just wanted to ask, also request real quick that any fellow operators on the call, please don't make these questions about anything specific to your own business. Just try and keep it pretty basic. But my question to you is, I think Nicole sent me that portfolio, and it's like a PDF with lots of pictures and all that.
Yeah.
All we have as far as a list for pricing, and you know, I just placed my first order this week. Mm-hmm. All we really have for a list of pricing is maybe 10 items with the pricing on it, and this was forwarded to us by Besby.
I have a much larger expanded list for you, so I can send that out. I do have, based on our account setup, I see that most of the accounts, say 95% of them, have an email address attached to it. So what I can do is I can follow up by the end of the week and send you each an email. I'll probably BCC all of you on it. So that way I can send you the thing. I could add the product portfolio list if you request that as well. So I could definitely send that to an email, and if the email does not work for you, please feel free to give me a call if you have a specific item you want pricing on.
Okay.
Hi, how are you? This is Shelley. I had a question. I had already signed up with Pepsi right before the pandemic. I'm a recent micro-market operator of around November of last year. I brought in Pepsi as a new option, not knowing what would happen with the, you know, state contract that you guys were awarded. I was okay. I'm pretty, you know, I like the products that you guys offer and the arrangement and everything like that. My question was, with both you and the other contractual people that we were dealing with, Coca-Cola, would you guys have a kind of an idea of how long your dates were versus as we get them in, that's how we know? Because sometimes you get product in and they only have 2 weeks on there, 3 weeks on there, and depending on the volume of traffic, it's not always consistent. Because with our businesses, a lot of people, some people aren't just in-house, some people do leave the building or have meetings and people come in. So depending on the flow of traffic, you may be buying things. I know we get credit, but I'd like to keep some things with a better mindset of how long shelf life is instead of when you get in. Oh, it may be expired next week or, you know, like 15 days, something like that.
Well, what I can say to that is if you ever get a delivery and we're delivering something that's got a week or 2 weeks expiration date, that's unacceptable. So I want to be made aware of that as soon as possible. I tell all of my customers that. Typically, it should be at least 2 months out when you're receiving a product. But if it's something where it's a week or 2 weeks, that's unacceptable. I want to be made aware of that because I can take care of that, because that's a warehouse issue. And you know, again, please let me know if that happens. I mean, I know that you already are aware that you'll get credit, but again,
right.
if it's a week or two out, I need to be made aware of that because that's a warehouse issue, and the warehouse would be needed to be aware of that as well, because I'm not going to just get questions from you on that. It's going to be, you know, the 1,300 other customers I have as well. So please make me aware of that as soon as possible if that does happen to you, Shelley.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
I have a question. I signed up with Pepsi months and months and months ago. And one of the questions I had for my rep, he was never able to answer, was are we going to be able to get Frito-Lay products as well?
Yeah, so Frito-Lay, obviously, is part of PepsiCo itself. I can get you in touch with, and I will find out who you need to speak with. It's a total separate entity than myself, but I could definitely include it's usually an 800 number that you call and request that you can get Frito-Lay products. So I can include that on a follow-up email to you all. And again, like I said, if email does not work for you, please call me and I'll provide you that number.
Can you hold on one second, Colin?
Yeah.
There's someone that's out in public and lots of noise in the background. If that person can just press *6, mute their phone. Thank you. Go ahead, Colin.
Yeah, so I can provide you that number. We do have the Gatorade bars, the protein bars that you can actually order through your rep, and as well, I double checked on Sabra, but Sabra might be one too. I don't deal a ton of snacks.
It is.
I can put you in touch.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sabra, the bars, the drinks, and there were a couple of others, but like we said, it's been such a long time. to kind of refresh your memory. This is, oh, if no one else has a question, this is Shelley again. I had another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. You had mentioned the repair number. I know you gave us your contact number. Were you going to give that to us now?
Yeah.
Or with
I think okay. I can give that to you right now if everybody's ready. So the equipment repair number is 800-562-6800. And each machine will have a sticker on it, like I mentioned, with the asset number, but the 800 number will be on there as well. And it's a pretty quick turnaround. If you call in that number, they're going to give you a couple options. So if it's a vendor or cooler, I believe the option's one, and then you'll speak to someone live. So we don't farm that out to anybody. If you ever do get a call, I just want to mention this really quickly about the install of our coolers. If they usually will call you with an install date when they're going to deliver the cooler. Keep in mind that that number is not going to be a Connecticut number. It's going to come from Winston-Salem. So if you're wondering why someone from Winston-Salem is calling you, chances are it's Pepsi calling you to schedule your install. And that's North Carolina number.
All right. Does anyone have any general questions for Howard?
Yes.
General Pepsi questions. Yep, go ahead.
Yes, it's me, Glenda. I have a question. And in my place, I sell in a lot of soda, a lot of juice because it's in a school. And the Coca-Cola give me delivery 2 times a week because I don't have storage in my place. And Pepsi only one or give me an extra one? Give me 2 times in a week.
It depends. I would say that it's probably going to be 1 time a week, but let's just where's your location?
In Norwalk Community College.
Norwalk Community College. So I would have to follow up with you. I'm just writing myself a note. Because typically, let's say it's a city like Hartford or Springfield, Massachusetts, our trucks are there almost every day. So if it's a location that is in an area where our trucks are out there on a frequent basis, I can't see that being a problem. But I don't want to tell you yes right now without knowing the exact answer for you. So I will follow up with that. And your name again was?
Glenda Lee Hernandez.
Okay. All right, perfect. I'll follow up with you on that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Does anyone else have any general question for Colin? Any additional general question?
Hey, can I just check in with, I just wanted to make a real quick comment. What the gentleman told you about Pepsi, we have had Pepsi in West Virginia for years, and their repair is pretty, as he had said, once you read the asset envelope to them, the repair time is usually same day. They always tell you to close it by the close of business the next day. I'm really excited to see that you guys actually have a Pepsi contract. You're going to find that it's going to be incredibly easy to work with your orders, your deliveries. When you do have a short day of product, they will absolutely take care of it. I just want to make that comment to you, to let your operators know that Pepsi is pretty spot on with their thing. We have dealt with them in West Virginia for many years, and we've all and consistently we've had good our great partnership with Pepsi. I'm really excited to see you guys have that. Doug said, just want to make that comment to you, just to from another state, just to let you guys know, let your operators know that you have made a really good deal here with Pepsi. So thanks a lot for having me on this call again, and thanks for the invite.
Thank you.
I appreciate the kind words.
Absolutely. That's we are definitely excited, Colin. I'm sure you know we've talked. This is a great partnership for sure. Certainly, you know, it's a tough time to start off with, but I know things will pick up and we'll be able to resume, look back and say, wow, you know, we made it through. So thank you for taking time out to speak with us.
And just thank you. And, you know, you guys are doing a great job. A lot of hard work is being done. Obviously, I know Tracy's put in countless hours, as I'm sure all of you have. I've seen, you know, the emails that go back and forth. You know, this transition is certainly of a magnitude that I don't think, I mean, we all knew it was going to be big, but you just don't realize how many moving pieces to the puzzle are actually involved when you're transitioning out one company and transitioning into a new partnership. So a lot's been learned just within this, you know, 60 plus days we've been in this partnership, and everyone's just doing as much as they possibly can, and we just thank you and just know that, it you know, certainly your hard work isn't being overseen, and certainly for Tracy's end, I know that as well. So thanks again, Colin. And so with that, we'd have to like kind of just stay on track. And with that, I asked Chairman Roberts to move on with the minutes approval of last meeting, which was actually, and that needs to be amended because we have on the agenda September 14th, 2019, when actually it should be June 23rd's minutes for approval, which have been sent to the committee. So, Chairman Roberts.
Okay, do we need to amend the agenda for that, or can we just go right to the vote of accepting the minutes?
Good question. I would say it probably should be amended just so it stays on track. So I would say amend first.
Okay, I'd like to amend the agenda from the September 14th to the date in June that Tyrell spoke of. Can I have that motion?
Yes. I shall motion that we amend the June minutes.
Motion accepted. Who is that as a second?
I second it.
Okay.
I second it.
So all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Okay, so we're going to move forward with, I hope everyone's had a chance to look over the few minutes that Tyrell has sent, and I'd like to ask for someone to accept the minutes from June.
I motion to accept the minutes from June.
Got it. I have a second.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say no. Okay. So we'll move on to the next item.
All right. And that's all right. I'll take this. So now we're moving on to old business, and old business is starting off with the budget update, income, expenses, and rest stops. You know, when I looked to discuss this piece of business, I was honestly in true panic, to be honest with you. I was concerned. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to actually be responsible for addressing this key piece of the information. However, as of most recent, we were able to receive this budgetary information, and to be honest with you, it really is not as bad as one would think. So with that being said, the beginning balance from the fiscal year carryover of October 1, 2019 began at $1,084,132.01. That's out of our primary expenditure account, which was 35149. That's pretty much the account that is really the heartbeat of the program. And so, you know, typically that's what we've carried over in the past, a million. Well, when I started, it was five, and then it kind of panned out to about a million each year. With that being said, as of date, as of 9/22, we have a balanced budget of $982,127.33. So, you know, there's a slight difference of about $100,000, we would say. However, we are due funds on both ends of of the contract. So, and with that being said, Coca-Cola owes us some back-end money, which is due, and it's sponsored, I believe it's rebate funds from Coke, which I'm not sure what that amount is going to pan out to be, but it's certainly owed, along with, I believe, some commission. As we obviously transitioned from Coke to Pepsi, in that transition, there were obviously machines that remained in facilities that were Coke and machines that were being installed as Pepsi. So, not to use the term lightly, we are going to be getting dribs and drabs of funds from both sides, and we do anticipate that. A huge piece of the budgetary update is that in this new partnership with Pepsi, we are due $325,000 sponsorship. And that will be coming soon. We are working on getting that and establishing the date of deposit, which we anticipate to be very soon. So when we factor in that, yes, our balance of 922 out of our general fund account is less than the million we typically carry over. Had we received, in which, you know, I'm not counting out, obviously, the 325,000 from Pepsi, that our budget would actually have exceeded the carryover amount, in which was, again, $1,084,000. And if we would have had the 325 today, I'd say we'd be looking at a carryover balance of maybe $1.3 million. So clearly, this is a basis off of obviously a balance, right? So we know we have facilities that are closed, therefore not requiring any repair expenses and service expenses that are associated with that. While we also are now receiving the income, the monthly income, to be a little less. All right. So part of this transition with Pepsi, there's hiccups. I mean, let's call it for what it is. You know, there's hiccups in communication, and therefore, you know, placement of machines may have lagged in certain areas. So at this time, you know, we haven't completed the transition is what I'm saying. So with that being said, we have not maximized all of our profitability. So at this point, we may even have locations that may be, you know, completely empty of Coke, and Pepsi is now working the transition. So there are spots in areas of our business that are not bringing in revenue at this time. So knowing that, even though our budget is not bleak at all when we really look at, in considering, I should say, we do have to keep a point of a fact that we will probably start to bleed this balance. And what I mean by that is, obviously, the income going forward, we anticipate to be less than, obviously, last year. So, therefore, our standard expenditures in which we need to operate the program will exceed that level of income coming in. You know, the good point about all of this, even through this pandemic, we've been lucky enough to continue to receive the $54,000 monthly payment from DOT, which has been truly a blessing even during these times. And I think as long as we continue to have that and anticipate Pepsi's revenue to slowly increase as machines are being placed and population starts to somewhat resume, things will balance out and we will be in good hands. That is my thought on that. I'm not sure how much of the budget is typically talked about. However, I will touch on the New Haven County Fund as well. That's a fund that typically is used for New Haven Courthouse, Middletown Courthouse, Waterbury Courthouse, and Hammonasset. The balance as of September 22nd is $213,554.26. And then we also have this interest-bearing account in which, as of now, has always been used in the past, just for knowing. We would use these funds on maybe like insurance payments and so forth, and that currently has a balance of $10,596.59. So to just kind of really paint a picture and hopefully reduce some fear and concerns from the overall perspective of the program's operational budget, I would say that we are currently doing okay. We're doing well, considering. So if you don't hear any panic tone in my voice, then trust me what I'm telling you, because I am big on watching the budget. As obviously you all know, my prior position required me to do that. So It's always going to be a very direct focus in how we operate. So we're good, okay? I think I don't want anyone to panic, you know. I don't want anyone to think that, you know, there's an end to this budget. There's not. There's good promise, and I really am thoroughly shocked as to where we leveled out. So we are good.
I'd like to make a couple notes on the budget. Looking at our, you had sent me our unassigned vending income locations and how good they did, and taking a look at that, trying to find, you know, coming out of this pandemic, I was trying to find possible locations to make jobs for blind operators, and I came up with five that I'd like for you guys to go back, research, maybe follow up on for the next meeting. I mean, obviously we're not looking to place anybody right away, but two of them I've seen as possible micro market locations, one being in Windsor Locks near where I have Bombardier. There's Pinnacle Logistics. The income there looked like it might be able to create a micro market for somebody to have. And, you know, like I said, you will have to take a look at these in the long run, but also the Hartford Post Office. I know some of us are a little concerned about going in there, but let's look at it. Maybe have Servomation give some information about micro markets and being able to go in there and feel safe that half the stuff isn't going to disappear off the shelves. The other three locations I don't see as possible micro markets, but maybe over the counter at these locations, and these are all train stations. The income of the vending looked awfully high, so maybe there's an opportunity in New Haven, West Haven, and Bridgeport. You could look at those as possible future locations for an operator. And one other tidbit I wanted to try and interject is we have four field reps that are probably looking for some stuff to do. Could we possibly divide the stay into quarters and have them go through town by town with a fine comb and maybe try and find spots that we can place vending machines to increase the income coming into the program, or opportunities for a vending round, for that matter?
To answer your question, I would say certainly at some point, obviously, revenue is what runs this program, so I wouldn't be opposed to seeking out any area in which we may have missed that could increase revenue. I would say at this time, at this particular time, I think our focus should stay directly on Pepsi in ensuring that those machines in which we've agreed to make this transition with are completely in place. Ensuring that we, you know, meet our end of the obligation in providing the space in which we stated in our contract with Pepsi as occupied, machine usage. So I just want to stay focused on this transition. Like I stated, there are some I don't want to say issues, but there's been some hiccups. So we got to be sure that our bread and butter is taken care of.
I completely understand that. We got to get through this transition first, but
right.
It's something that if we still have field reps at home and most operators aren't back to work, I just want it to be something we try and get to.
Yes, no, definitely. We can certainly reassess that. You know, we certainly can, because, again, any dollar that we can bring into this program, I am for. So I am with you with that, and we can certainly double back on that and see where things stand once we get this transition in place. Okay. With that, I think I have that. So we can move on to regulation updates. Chairman Roberts, would you like to add that?
Yeah, if anybody on the call that's on the subcommittee for the regulations, if there's any kind of update they can give us.
That's me. So I really looked over what Sherry and Nikki, we had sent a several of Sherry and Nikki, and they looked over our regulations and actually sent us back some things that they thought that would be beneficial for maybe us to look at. But then we were kind of told that we should not do that at this time, that we should focus on some other things, and that opening that can of worms is just that. If we want to change some things, we have to prepare that other people may want to change things, and that could cause us some, not to change some things for us that we don't want to change. So I think it's something that we definitely need to look at further in more detail of what could possibly other people want to change that would affect us for the changes that we want to make, for some of the changes that were suggested that we make are in regards to committee members. Other states do not have a time frame on committee members. Committee members can serve for as long as they would like to, and or unless they are removed for reasons of not paying the things, not doing their taxes, things like that, you can be removed from as a committee member if you are not up to date and significantly behind on like your tax payment or payments to the agency or whatever the situation. But any other
morning. What are you there for? Oh, wonderful.
Is Terry still on the call?
We've lost him.
Steve, he signed off right when he was talking about Pepsi and, you know, how good he was, how happy he was with their service. I think that's when he signed off.
Okay.
Terry's here. I was just having trouble figuring out. I double mute myself and I couldn't get off mute.
Could you speak to that a little bit, Terry? Should we be concerned about opening up a can of worms by, I mean, we talked.
Terry was not the one who said that. That was not.
Yeah, Terry
who,
wasn't.
By Nanda or anybody else. That was actually made by people need.
Yeah, let me chime in on that comment, and I'll be more than happy to. It's always been of the thought process that if you are looking to open the regulation, that it has extreme value. So bringing the regulations to the table, changes that are required or that you're looking or seeking for change should be of something that you are in preparation of potentially having those people that have political power to make change observant of, and that it's worthy of. So bringing what I don't want to call it low-level fruit to the table is something that has always been of the mindset of my understanding that you wouldn't want to do at that time. You would only want to make like mass changes that would truly benefit the program moving forward. Terry, how do you... Can you chime in on that, in your thought process on that?
Well, the way I look at it, you have your state law, and then below that you have your regulations. So if people are going to really engage and try to do things that are harmful to the program, they're going to have to do it at the statutory level. So, you know, the regulations are more about how you're running your program. So unless you are putting into your regulations how the priority is going to be applied and all that kind of stuff, that could send up some red flags. But if it's just how you're operating your program, you know, I don't know that it generally draws a whole lot of attention because if it does draw attention, they're going to have to go to the legislature and get the bill changed, get the law changed. They can't change it through regulations. So I say all that to say, unless you're dealing with the priority itself, it doesn't. I don't get all too concerned about people wanting to make changes because they don't have the power to do that.
Okay. Okay. And then, well, certainly moving forward, we can certainly move and reassess any changes that you all feel are required. Because again, this is the time for change. So if changes can be made, I am not opposed to it. Certainly if we feel that it benefits you, the operator, first and foremost, and following that it doesn't obviously, that there's a balance in this change of understanding. I think that's where I'll leave it, that certainly it warrants it, because we're going to need it. We're going to need to be able to, and we're anticipating moving in a direction of the unknown. However, knowing that certainly our past practices are going to have to be modified to make it going forward. So I will leave it with that.
Yeah, I mean, the last time that they were updated was in the 70s or 80s. The way people are spending money now is totally different. So anything we can update within our regulations to go get that money, it's only going to make sense.
Right.
Right. And there are definitely changes that can be made that look like they would be good, beneficial moves for us to make, for us as operators, as well as just some of the wording is so outdated, it's like, huh? Which is little things that isn't necessary. But there was a lot of, I think, things that would help our program run a little bit more smoothly and a little bit more sound, you know, in a sense, of letting those who want to be a part of things be a part of things, and not those who don't want to be a part of things to be a part of things. So I think that I think it's definitely something we should continue to look at, and if everybody's on board with pushing forward, then I think that we should. Again, there's not many changes that we are looking to make, but there are some that are, we feel, I feel, significant and would be positive things for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly, you know, let's continue with that thought process. And what better time than now, you know, to, while we're all at peace, you know, as far as being able to think logically, think clearly, and think futuristic, this would be the time to certainly start to generate some conversation and draft up some things. So let's keep that on.
And I'd like to ask for permission to join that subcommittee now that I'm not tied down as being chairman. If I could join that subcommittee, unless someone has any objections to it.
It's me, Chad, and Rich, as I recall, as it was originally, so I have no objections to that.
Tyrell, can that be amended and not be a problem?
That should be fine. I have no problem with that.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So we have that. Brandy, are you all set with the regulation update?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
unless anybody has any questions or wants to know something more specific, something.
All right. Whomever has that background noise, can you just politely star six?
I just came in. I don't know if it's me.
Okay. Adam, can you do me a favor?